Jessup Show.
Norm Farrell is an accountant who has a blog called Insights, where he posts his thoughts after investigating issues that most reporters in the mainstream media ignore. Today he's with us to talk about outlandish promises by the BC Liberals, along with other issues. Norm, how are you today?
Hi, very good, Ian.
Now, prior to the last provincial election, the BC Liberals promised a prosperity fund of $100 billion or more based on the riches of selling LNG. And prior to the 2005 election, they made another outlandish promise, which I got to admit, Norm, I completely forgot about. Tell us about that.
There was a discussion of the potential for job creation through using innovative energy structures, and they were talking quite specifically about private power. And they commissioned a number of different reports, and one of them promised as many as 400,000 new jobs over 25 years, and promised that it would establish BC as a leader in renewable energy. They saw a huge market in the U.S. and expected that British Columbia could be the center of production. And so they set upon doing the arrangements with independent power producers. And today we're paying, and our grandchildren will end up paying, the consequences of those decisions. But it really struck me that whereas we'd thought the LNG lies before the 2013 election were huge, in that one they were only promising 75,000 full-time jobs. So in 2005, it was, well, almost five times the number of jobs being promised.
Norm, one of the things when I talk to people about run-of-river projects, I think most people really don't understand the financial consequences of what the BC Liberal government entered into about a decade ago. Can you give us a kind of a run-of-river 101 and explain it to us with the financial implications?
Yeah, run-of-river is probably, it was a good marketing term, but it's probably a really poor descriptor of what occurs. If you go to my website, you'll see a little video that was done a few years ago, and it gives a nice 3-minute description of what run-of-river might be.
Yeah, it's a great video, isn't it?
Exactly, and yeah. It makes the claim that run-of-river may mean that the river is now into a pipe, a large pipe that goes down through the generators. And of course, that's not going to work for the fish and other animal life that depends on the river. However, there's a whole series of different kinds of power structures. We have there's one up in Seashell Peninsula where basically they punched a hole in the bottom of an alpine lake and put a pipe down through it so that when the lake is full, they can open up the pipe and generate power until the lake is exhausted, and then they wait some period of time for it to refill. That's kind of a system that's not run of river, but it's a hydro facility. There are numerous situations where they've built weirs across the rivers and divert the flows and manage the flows in ways that are quite unnatural. But yet run of river has the sense that you simply don't interfere with the river itself. You just take advantage of the water flowing by a small system. It's possible, but those kinds of systems tend to not have the potential of power production that other more sophisticated arrangements have. BC Hydro has continued to make arrangements for buying private power despite the fact that we haven't had a growth in internal demand. We have no particular need for additional power, and yet we're spending huge sums of money each year to acquire this power, and it's the most expensive power that you can have. BC was paying in the last quarter, that was the most recent report we can look at, but BC paid almost 10 cents a kilowatt hour for that power that they purchased from private producers. It's actually even worse than that, because we had some old arrangements such as the Kamano completion site and so on that we're producing power at lower prices. Some of the new operations that have come on stream in more recent years are well over that average price. The BC Hydro is continuing to sell power to its larger users at less than 6 cents a kilowatt hour. So there's a huge decrease. And I pointed out in my blog previously that there's one particular company, AltaGas, that is contracted with BC Hydro. I calculated the value of the contract over time is over $4 billion. And AltaGas is being paid premium rates of power, premium rates for their power, and yet they're eligible to buy power back from BC Hydro at the industrial rates, which is 40% or more less than what they're being paid for power.
And these are long-term contracts that BC Hydro enters into.
The AltaGas contracts run 60 years.
60 years.
Yeah.
And these are long-term contracts that BC Hydro enters into, which we as taxpayers pay for, and we are contractually obligated to the tune of how much, Norm? I think it was $69 billion?
That's correct. We don't know what the latest numbers are because BC Hydro doesn't routinely report these numbers. They come out when the annual financial statements are issued, but we haven't had any annual financial statements since the last ones out were dated March of 2015.
Now, Norm, you have on your website a bar graph on the residential price of BC Hydro. And if I'm looking at it right now, in 2001, residents paid about, six cents per kilowatt hour.
Yep.
And now we pay close to
10.7. But that's only the beginning because BC Hydro, from an accounting point of view, is losing money. They have been going through aggressively capitalizing expenses. They've been deferring expenses and doing various different tricks to keep from declaring the losses that they're actually incurring. So all of these things are, this is kind of like a flood behind a wall. It just keeps building up and building up, and eventually that has to break through. I've said to you before that it is inevitable that BC Hydro will have to make massive increases in the rates of that they're charging for electricity. And politically, this government has no desire to pass those increases along to the largest industrial users. So it's the residents that that will pay the impact. To some degree, the commercial, small business and commercial operators will pay as well. But it's really the residential consumers that will suffer the largest increases. And if we're now at about 11, almost 11 cents a kilowatt hour and BC Hydro is still in financial difficulty, we're going to have to recognize those $6 billion or so of deferred expenses. And that means, in, I've said to you before, very large increases in BC Hydro rates.
So BC Hydro rates, if they go up again, well, we know they're going to go up next year, but it could reach 12 cents a kilowatt hour. If it does that, then that's a doubling in hydro rates since 2001.
And well, you'll see from the graph that I went back to 1977.
That's right.
And
yeah.
There was a real period of stability of BC Hydro rates. If you look at 1995, the rates were just slightly over 6 cents a kilowatt hour, and they were still that in 2004. So you've seen a very long period of time of real stability. When that changed was when they began to implement the private power facility. Again, getting back to what we talked about at the beginning, they had this dream that they were going to create a huge center of power production and service the entire North American market, or at least the Western U.S. And so they made that major commitment. They couldn't get investors to put up the money and take the risk, so the province decided to take the risk. And the way it's worked out since alternative alternative energy systems came into being. The fact is that it's the taxpayers that have ended up being stuck with the risk, and BC Hydro couldn't stay with the stable rates that they once had, so they've gone from 6 cents up to close to 11 cents just in the last number of years.
Norm, hang on. We have to take a commercial break. Norm Farrell is our guest. He's the author of the blog Insights. Welcome back. Norm Farrell, the author of the blog Insights, is our guest. Norm's here periodically to go over some of his investigative work. Let's go to the phones and talk to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Thanks, Ian. Hi, Norm. Norm, two questions. First question is, do you know which consulting firm did the piece that promised 400,000 jobs for the run-of-the-river stuff, and whether they have made any contributions to the Liberal parties? And on a slightly different note, Norm, I seem to recall the Columbia River Treaty was really a profit maker for the BC back in the 90s and 80s. Where are we now on that? Thanks, Ian.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
You know, the first question, I can't give a specific answer. I know there was a non-profit organization that was involved in it. There was a task force that the province, Premier Campbell, had put together. I read a report from a University of British Columbia professor who wrote a pretty substantial report, but it was a really comprehensive view of a whole series of different things that could be done. And the sort of clean energy, the green energy program that was originally talked about by a number of people, in my view, was not a bad one, but it was corrupted by the business interests that took control. And so then they ended up losing much of the different elements that had been planned or suggested as part of a program, and they proceeded just with the one that had immediate profits for certain commercial operators who were able to get licenses and create contracts with BC Hydro and then flip those deals off to others. So the promoters, I'm afraid, took over from the people that had the level-headed view of what could be possible. So we missed an opportunity largely because of greed and mismanagement. With respect to the Columbia River Treaty, that's a relatively complex situation that I'm still researching. I traveled to the southeast of BC recently and spent a fair bit of time talking to people about the impact of the Columbia River Treaty. And there I found again that originally, back in the 90s, there were some programs put together and some political intentions of giving benefits, particularly to the region that was most impacted. And those early concepts of creating local benefits in the areas have gone away to a large degree, and it happened, it seems to be related to changing from local representation on the Columbia River organizations, the Columbia Basin Trust and so on, and so those people seem to have lost influence, and it's been taken over more completely by the politicians that are centered in Victoria. So I can't really give you a definitive answer on Columbia River because I haven't completed my research, but I've learned that it's a little more complex than it seems, but there's likely to be some changes too because there's renegotiations that are scheduled to occur in the near future.
Norm, let's switch to natural gas, the big promise in the last provincial election. What's the difference between the revenue brought in during Christy Clark's premiership and that of Gordon Campbell?
That really is quite amazing, isn't it? I know your listeners are probably spinning with the different numbers that I've been throwing out, but the easy one to remember is that for every $7 that Gordon Campbell's government's brought in for rights sales of natural gas, Christy Clark's government has brought in less than a dollar. So we're talking talking about reductions that are huge. It's gone from over $7 billion to under $1 billion in the same period of time. So we've had a huge drop-off. And again, that's another situation that I'm looking at. What I discovered is that contracts or rights arrangements were typically for as much as 10-year terms, and recently they've been only putting them out for 3-year terms, and that's resulted in gas companies bidding far less for these short-term agreements. The only thing is that the bureaucrats are able to renew those agreements without going back to tender. And so I fear that we may have a situation where we've changed from an open bidding process to something somewhat different that's allowing the existing players to go in and get contracts and then have them administratively renewed for continuing periods of time. And when you don't have any competition for the rights in different areas, the net result is you're going to get less revenue coming into government. So that's something, again, that I'm working on, and I hope to have some answers within the next month.
Norm, it's interesting to go through the 2013 election document to the Liberals. I'll throw out some of the claims they made. Keeping public debt down is the key to making BC the economic engine of Canada. Well, no one will argue with that, but since Christy Clark has become premier, the debt has gone from $54 billion to $70 billion by the time the next election will roll around, so she's created more debt in her time of office than all other governments in the history of British Columbia combined.
Well, it's even worse than that because they redefined debt so that a number of different spending programs of government that are in effect off balance sheet, so they make arrangements with some private operator to put a project together, and then they agree to finance that over time with the private operator, but they don't count it as debt. Now, if you have an obligation to make a monthly payment, whether you call it debt or don't call it debt is a question of semantics, but the fact is there's an obligation to pay monthly amounts, and if you add in all of those contractual obligations that the province has involved here up into, you know, we're going to be pushing $200 billion before much longer, because the government has major campaigns underway to spend huge sums of money. BC Hydro Site C is one example of that, where they're going to be spending perhaps $10 billion, perhaps more, on a dam that we don't need. Even if it proceeds as budgeted, the cost of power there is going to be about double what the current cost of creating solar power is. So we're racking up these huge amounts of debt for no good business purpose, and yet we don't like to count many of the debts that we oblige ourselves.
Norm, here are a couple of other statements from the election document that I know will warm the cockles of your heart. The BC Jobs Plan defined aggressive targets, 8 new mines and 9 expanded ones in production by 2015. Well, that didn't happen. We can create $1 trillion in economic activity and create the BC Prosperity Fund with $100 billion over 30 years. Well, that won't happen. Next one. The government has set a goal of at least 3 LNG facilities online by 2020. Well, we know that won't happen either. But the statement that they have in their budget in their election document says, today's BC Liberals plan to control spending, create jobs, and keep the economy growing. The only thing that's grown is debt. But as Napoleon Bonaparte said, Norm, in politics, stupidity is not a handicap.
You know, we've said before that they always claim they're on time and on budget, and that's only because they changed the schedule and changed the budget.
Yeah, that's right. Norm, always good to talk to you. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye.